Thank you for downloading this podcast of Douglas Hope discussing Cooperative Holidays Association, recorded at the British Society of Sports History Northwest Workshop in November 2012.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to tell you something about the research that I'm doing at the University of Cumbria into the activities of two organisations that pioneered the provision of rational holidays for working people at the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th centuries. That is the Cooperative Holidays Association and the Holiday Fellowship, one founded in 1897 and the other in 1913. By a man called Thomas Arthur Leonard. My paper today is titled Pen and Paper Quizzes, Games and Dances, and that is taken from the final AGM of the Countrywide Holidays Association held in November 2004 when the association was finally wound up. The Countrywide Holidays Association was the Cooperative Holidays Association, renamed in 1964, and simply known throughout most of its life as the CHA. The report of that AGM concludes, tinged with sadness but reflecting on what had been achieved over a century, this AGM and the house party weekend were enjoyable as well as memorable. At the end, the house parties on the Friday and Saturday evenings proved extremely successful, with guests enjoying the mix of pen and paper quizzes, games and dancing. Then on the Sunday, many guests enjoyed an exhilarating 7-mile walk taking in Pendle Hill, an experience in the delights of Lancashire's hill country. This really is a reminder of where the organisation had begun. And I want to tell you a little about where this is and what the organisation has stood for during its life. I'll just make an observation at the end. If you keep in mind the kind of people that were holidaying with the CHA at the end, you'll see how that compares with what the organisation was set up to serve at the beginning. Because by common consent, the CHA originated in 1891 in Colm, not far from Nelson and not far from Burnley and Bolton, when the Congregational Minister T.A. Leonard took members of his social guild for a 4 days holiday to Ambleside in the Lake District. Leonard sought to dissuade the young workers of Colm from going in droves during Wakes Week to Blackpool, Morecambe and the Isle of Man, and introduce them instead to the wilds of Pendle Hill, Ribblesdale and the Lake District. I think Leonard is on this... Oh, wrong one. Well, that went quick. Yes, Leonard is in the centre of the picture with the beard. The standard photograph of Leonard is one taken when he was 60 or 70, and it'll be coming along. But photographs of him are available of him in his 20s, 30s and 40s, where he looks quite different. One associates organisations with greying old Victorians, and that's what the established photograph of Leonard looks like. But in fact, he wasn't a grey, bearded Victorian all his life. He was quite a young, active, exhilarating man in his early life. The origin and development of the CHA and the Holiday Fellowship, as I'm sure most of you will know, has been very well researched, and I think Melanie Tebbutt has already referred to Harvey Taylor's claim on the countryside, there's Susan Barton's working class organisations and popular tourism, and there are a number of books edited by Walton, either on his own or with other people, Hanley and Walton's Constructing Cultural Tourism. And each of them deal in their own inimitable fashion with the emergence of what is called rational holiday movement and cover the early activities and the origins and formation of the CHA and Holiday Fellowship. Bob Snape, who you may have heard of at the University of Bolton, has done some work on the early development of the CHA in particular, and their contribution, or its contribution, to countryside leisure practice. And I think Ben Anderson gave a talk at the conference in Glasgow on aspects of the activities of the CHA, again, prior to the First World War. And that really has led me on to my research, which is concentrating on the period after the First World War. And it's really looking at how the two organisations dealt with the far-reaching changes that have taken place during the 20th century, the social, economic and cultural changes, particularly since the First World War, how they responded to these changes, increasing affluence and consumer choice, changing cultural attitudes and expectations, the popularisation of outdoor recreation, and changes in funding and regulation, and of course competition from what I've called rival providers, because during the lifetime of these organisations, other providers have come along, YHA of course in 1930, and then a whole range of other organisations post-war, the various outdoor activity providers, the other charitable organisations like Outward Bound, the Braithy Hall in the Lake District, the local authorities in providing outdoor centres themselves, and right up to the present time when you have the privately run outdoor activity centres. And these have all, if you like, have been in competition with these two organisations. What I'm hoping to determine through in my PhD is answers to these two or three questions. How they've dealt with the of what I've called the conflicting demands of altruism and commercial necessity. How they've tried to keep their principles and deal with the social objectives which they were set up to provide, and how they've managed to retain a viability in changing economic circumstances. And therefore, the extent to which they've drifted away from their original ideals and philosophy, and why. And finally, if you like, on a more positive note, what have been the achievements of these organisations and the legacy of the founder, Thomas Arthur Leonard? Leonard was born in London, in Finsbury, in 1864, which was a hotbed of radicalism and religious dissension. In fact, his mother was the daughter of a Congregational minister, and he inherited a nonconformist tradition. It's been said that he has been described as a Christian socialist, a radical, a pacifist, a disciple of Matthew Arnold and John Ruskin. And I might just mention that during his time in Colne, he shared a platform with Keir Hardie. He was a member of the Independent Labour Party. He subsequently became quite friendly with Ramsay MacDonald, and he was a compatriot of John Trevor and Philip Snowden. I love name dropping, isn't it? They're not friends of mine, they're just friends of T.A. Leonard. So he was very much a radical, and in fact some have argued that that was one of the main reasons why he actually left the ministry in Colne, rather than for the traditional reason of wanting to expand his holiday movement. But he went to Theological Training College in Nottingham under the guidance of Dr. John Brown Payton, and it was Payton who really influenced him in his future in the ministry. Payton was the president of the National Home Reading Union, which combined holiday making with informal education. And he was a great influence on Leonard, saw his potential, and he's quoted as saying, why not do this for thousands? And it was under the auspices of the National Home Reading Union that the first holidays were provided by Leonard. But so it was in 1893 that the Cooperative Holidays Association was formally constituted. And its purpose was not to arrange a particularly jolly type of holiday, certainly not, but to provide simple and strenuous recreative and educational holidays by offering reasonably priced accommodation and to promote friendship and fellowship amid the beauty of the natural world. It was very much a reaction against, if you like, the thoughtless spending of money on inane types of amusement, which has been quoted in Blackpool and other seaside resorts. It was very much a product of Victorian philanthropy and social reform, and is associated, I think, with the concepts or culture, I'm not sure which word I want to use after listening, hearing what you had to say earlier, voluntarism, collectivism, and the cooperative movement. And there are parallels with other organisations. Organisations look like the Clarion Clubs, set up by Robert Blatchford, Toynbee Hall, who provided holidays through the Toynbee Travellers Club, the Polytechnic Touring Association, founded by Quintin Hogg, and the Workers Travel Association, which I think was very much more a political organisation. Although Leonard is very strongly associated with Colne, that's what everybody quotes, the CHA was founded in Colne in 1891 by Leonard, he actually only lived there for 4.5 years. And in 1895 he moved to London to run Peyton's first social institute in Islington, and then took up residence in Whitby in 1896, which was the CHA's first acquisition. From founding the CHA in 1897, he went on to found the Holiday Fellowship in 1913, and again there have been various reasons given as to why he left the CHA to found the Holiday Fellowship. Publicly, his reasons have been given as his dissatisfaction with the association's desire to improve the quality of its centres and the increasing lack of idealism. But there are other reasons. I refer to the fact that Leonard was indeed a pacifist and a strong pacifist, and perhaps there were tensions there with other members of the CHA who were overtly supported the First World War and the recruitment of soldiers and so on for the First World War. So he left to found a Holiday Fellowship, but it's interesting that even though he hoped to go back to an organisation which was providing Spartan accommodation, cheap accommodation, in the true spirit of his ideals, the Holiday Fellowship developed very much in a similar way to the CHA. In buying country houses, there were a lot of them available after the Second World War. They were cheap, buying them and using them. And indeed, throughout the period and after the Second World War, both organisations developed very much in parallel. The next slide just shows how these did develop in terms of the numbers of centres that they've occupied, and the number of visitors is reflected by that too. Both organisations have occupied something like 100 centres over the period of the century, something like 30 or 40 at any particular time. Basically, what this shows is that the Holiday Fellowship was always much more successful than the CHA in terms of numbers of centres. It also shows how the development really expanded after the First World War. We've heard about the problems after the First World War, but indeed people did take holidays with the CHA and Holiday Fellowship, whether it was a reaction from the war, wanting to get out into the countryside, the growth of rambling and so on. But the 20s and 30s saw a real expansion of holiday making with the CHA and the Holiday Fellowship, even though, for instance, the 1930s was meant to be a time of depression. And again, after the Second World War, there was a huge expansion in the use of these organisations. The rest of the story is the fact of decline after the 60s and 70s, the heydays of the 60s and 70s, in response to rival provision, in response to difficulties with running an organisation on a shoestring, and perhaps also in terms of bad management for some of the organisation. I don't know how much of this you'll be able to read, but I just wanted to say something about what the holidays consisted of. The first holidays consisted solely of compulsory walks, daily walks, and they were compulsory. Later on, there were three kinds, A, B, and C. Some of you will know all this anyway. I think A walks were over 14 miles, B 10, and C were 5 or 6 or 7 miles or something. And in the Lake District terms, you would be going up Strawfell or Great Gable or whatever on the A walk, on some of the lesser hills on the other walks, and you might be doing a valley walk in the C walk. There was a rest day on Sundays, of course, no walking on Sunday. There would be prayers on a Sunday, church attendance. There would be grace in the morning. There was certainly no alcohol, and there were other very strict authoritarian rules. There are a number on here. There's no intoxicants allowed in the guest house of the fellowship, and it's hoped that guests will refrain altogether from their use during the holiday. So you couldn't nip out for a pint at lunchtime or anything like that. Closing hour, the common room entertainment at all centres closed at 10:30. It's expected that guests will be in their bedrooms and absolute quiet be observed after 11. Guests are booked only under the standing that they agree to these arrangements, which are framed for the common good. The
2 minutes,
right. So they were the kinds of holidays which at the beginning of the 1940s, and in fact these kinds of holidays continued, this kind of system, right through to the 70s and 1980s. It was only in the 1980s that things started to change in response to changes, social and cultural changes. The other thing I wanted to mention is that from the 30s onwards, both organisations had an active campaign to try and get young people to take holidays with them, and these are the copies of some of the brochures that they've had, and you see the kind of activities being put forward. But in fact, the clientele was quite different. The reality was different from the projections. This is Grasmere in 1922, and some of the photographs taken at the more holiday resorts, and this is Conway. You would think that they were more interested in playing tennis and other cultural activities than active holidays. There were one or two mountain centres, as they were called, and this is Borrowdale in the Lake District, where people were obviously kitted out and did go hill walking. And so they do today. Before I finish up then, what I would want to say is two or three things, I think, that There are a number of issues with these organisations which are quite clear. Fellowship and friendship continued as an important aspect of holidays with these two organisations, even though as time has gone on, the activities that has been undertaken has changed. From the 70s and 80s onwards, holidays have diversified in response to requests and pressures put on the organisations. So there are special interest holidays, playing chess, tennis, dancing, painting holidays and so on. But friendship and fellowship has been a continuing ideal, which is, still continues today. And in a survey that I've been doing of clubs and individual members, these are the kinds of quotes that have been coming to me, that their experience has been amazing, wonderful, meeting friends, although traditions have gone, the fellowship remains and so on. And an interesting aspect of these two organisations is that two-thirds, throughout the whole period of the life of these organisations, two-thirds of the occupants, the guests, the visitors, have been female. It's been very much a female-dominated organisation, not a male one, which is quite different to the norm. What I would just want to say is that it would be easy to equate the story of the CHA and Holiday Fellowship with that of an institution in decline, as many Victorian organisations have. But that is only one view. I think there is another view, and that is that they were pioneers of rational holidays for young people, then families. They provided holidays for the poor with free and assisted holidays long before the coming of the social service sector. They now cater for an ageing population, but in doing that, they help to maintain physical activity for the elderly, which is a government policy. They've catered for single people, single women, for most of their life. Single people is a growing percentage of the population, and if you like, political and social requirements of outdoor education has always been to try and get more women in outdoor education, in outdoor activities, which has constantly been male dominated. Well, the CHA and HF have been successful in doing that. As one former chairman has said to me, the essential tradition of the CHA lay in people cooperating to create a world in which they wish to live, and not in any specific tradition or activity like morning prayers, folk dancing, or playing follow my leader up a hill. The Holiday Fellowship still provides holidays for like-minded people in an atmosphere of friendship and fellowship. When Leonard died in 1948, three memorial tablets were erected to commemorate his life and achievements. In the Lake District and in on Conwy Mountain in North Wales. The words that are on there epitomise, I think, his approach to life, which is still relevant today, that the best things that any mortal hath are those which every mortal shares, and joy in widest commonality spread, which is taken from a Wordsworth poem. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm looking for the D route. I don't know about A, B and C. Any questions? Melanie?
Yeah, can I come back to the point I was going to ask before you actually made it? The involvement of young women in both organisations, was that just as strong before the First World War as it was after? Has that been a constant all the way through? That's
Yes, it was. I mean, there may well have been variations, yes, of course. I'm sure there are variations. But the predominance of women dates from the 1890s and the early 1900s. And it seems that the emerging class of teachers and clerks and so on at that period you know, local and central government and the changes in the economy, as well as the explosion in education. And of course, Charlotte Mason, who which in Cumbria we all know about, of course, was also linked with, or T.L. Leonard was linked with Charlotte Mason, and CHA went to Charlotte Mason College in the summer for holidays. There was always that predominance of women, even before the First World War, yes.
So there were young men and young women. Did that cause any the rules to be changed? There they are all together. Was there any kind of monitoring of the behaviour or a sense that it was inappropriate that they should be brought together? How did Leonard respond?
Well, I think as Ben Anderson touched upon this, didn't he, at the conference in Glasgow, and I've only read a few notes that he made. But, you can imagine there are all sorts of rules and informal and formal arrangements going on. And you know as well as I that CHA became known as Catch a Husband Association, and the Holiday Fellowship as Husbands Found. But I react to that and say, yeah, but it must have been difficult if there were twice as many women as men. You know, if there'd been twice as many men as women, it would have been easier, wouldn't it, if you see what I mean? And my survey of the clubs and members that I've done does show, in fact, that, you know, there are several generations of families who did meet on these holidays and got married and had children, took their children, and then they've got married as well. Looking through the archives, you know, you can imagine there are all the stories about, yes, it says no alcohol, but, I mean, that didn't really stop us taking beer into our rooms after 11 o'clock, although the rules said we shouldn't. And there are stories, hypothetical and real, about the different hosts and hostesses who ran these centres. You know, some were like regimental sergeant majors and went round. A lot of these early centres, if they did have electricity, it was with a generator. And the way to turn the light out was to turn the generator off. And, of course, that's what happened. So there was then candles and, you know, there are all these stories.
Did women play a full part in the management of these? I mean, they were members, but did they also organise and manage within?
Yes, I think they did, yes. Earlier on, yes. Perhaps as time went on, not so much. No, I've been talking earlier that one of the tensions of how the organisation have moved from being a very altruistic organisation to being a very commercial organisation has been that instead of having it being ruled by members for members, it's become organised by a board with a general manager and a chief executive rather than just the secretary and so on. And as a result, things have changed, this relationship between the members and the organisation.
Anybody else?
Okay. Yeah, it seems part of that rather sort of earnest, rational recreation movement that you often found in ILP circles, and then after the First World War in the labour movement more generally. Stephen Jones's stuff on that is quite interesting, I think. And in one sense, one has an admiration for it, because it's kind of anti-capitalist, and as you say, resisting frivolous entertainment. J.B. Priestley would have loved it. I mean, I'm certain he'd be a member of it.
George Bernard Shaw, I think,
would suit him down to the ground. But on the other hand, it does have that rather slightly dreary image to it. I wonder whether in 1964, when it changed its name, when the co-op itself, incidentally, did it have any connections with the co-op movement?
It didn't. In fact, that was the reason why, or one of the reasons why, the Cooperative Holiday Association changed its name in 1964.
Right.
Partly to move away from the concept of cooperation and its religious connotations and so on.
Yeah.
and partly because it was being strongly associated with the co-op.
Yeah.
And it was never associated with the co-op. No.
And the co-op was having its own image problems in the 50s and early 60s, wasn't it? I just wondered whether they did try and sort of pull away from the more earnest aspect.
Yes. So it's interesting that throughout the life of these two organisations, from the 60s onwards, they've tried more and more to distance themselves from their origins.
Mm.
And I've been working closely with the Holiday Fellowship in this last year or two. As I say, the CHA folded in 2004. Its archives are in the Greater Manchester Record Office in Marshall Street up to the 1990s. And I've managed to make contact with a few people who've been involved in the organisation up to the 2000s. Holiday Fellowship is still on the go as HF Holidays. They changed their name to become more progressive again at about the same time. And HF is, of course, going to celebrate its centenary next year, 2013. And now it's bringing out all its associations and links with its origins. As a cooperative movement and with T.A. Leonard and so on and so forth, links which for the last 30 years or more it's totally distanced itself from.
Back to your invented traditions. Thank you very much for that. Appreciate it.